As I said, the Athenians had to endure the terror of the 30 tyrants headed up by Critias, a self-styled student of Socrates. These men carried out executions and confiscation of property on a scale that had offended many in the city. It led to a democratic rising headed up by Thrasybulus, the old associate of Alcibiades, who returned from exile, raised the Democrats against Critias. Critias was killed in the complicated fighting, and the Spartans themselves intervened early in 403 BC, abolished the 30, and reinstituted the Athenian democracy. Athens had her democracy back, but as a dutiful ally of Sparta. It was only by accepting Persian money in 396 and in 395 BC that the Athenians regained the ability to build a fleet, refortify their city, and once again become a serious power. And they entered into the alliance, the quadruple alliance against Sparta in the so-called Corinthian War. And that was an indication of how far Athenian imperial ambitions had fallen. And under the King's Peace of 386 BC, Athens regained some of her colonies in the Aegean. She regained her independence and fleet, but Athens no longer was ever going to be the hegemon of Greece. And her naval league she put together in 377 BC was a very weak institution indeed, and completely incapable of facing Philip of Macedon, let alone exercising even a hegemony in the Aegean. And so Athens came out of the Peloponnesian War, recovered in some ways, regained her democracy, regained much of her economic position, but never again could regain that military political position she once had. Furthermore, the Athenian democracy had been scarred by the fighting of the later stages of the Peloponnesian War. There were recriminations. The trial of Socrates in 399 BC is probably best understood as the Athenians venting their anger on Socrates the way the assembly had vented its anger on the generals at the trial of Arginusae. And it really took a generation for the Athenians to recover a sense of themselves and once again see Athens as a city-state of at least equal power to Thebes, Corinth, and Sparta, but certainly no longer the great state of Greece. And Athens was slowly evolving into the university town she would become under Roman rule. Corinth perhaps fared the worst. It's clear that the Corinthians took an enormous loss in trade and colonies. It took over two generations before the Corinthians could recover their economic position. But Corinth never again achieved any kind of major political significance. Corinth inevitably was the lesser member of an alliance structure. And the Corinthians thereafter never exercised the kind of influence they did in the 5th century BC, in the later centuries of the 4th and 3rd centuries BC. And finally, there was Thebes. The Thebans perhaps came out the best of all. The Thebans managed to consolidate the control of Boeotia. They secured the pass of Thermopylae. They very often controlled Megara. Twice they challenged the Spartans in the generation after the Peloponnesian War. First in the Corinthian War between roughly 396 and 386 BC, and then again from 377 to 371 BC, when under their commander Epaminondas, they won a crushing victory at the Battle of Leuctra, essentially adapting the hoplite tactics they had been using for several generations, adopting the Spartan drill, even adopting the Spartan alliance structures, crushing a Peloponnesian mercenary army in Boeotia, and then invading the Peloponnesus in the next year. And in the year 370 and 369 BC, a Boeotian army marched across the Peloponnesus, concluded an alliance with an Argos, now greatly expanded, a new Arcadian League in central Peloponnesus, and above all, a Messenia liberated as an independent polis in an alliance with Thebes. In many ways, the Thebans had learned their lessons very well from Sparta, and as I've stressed at several points in this lecture, the Thebans were the competitor to Sparta for that axis on the Gulf of Corinth. They finally succeeded. They had usurped the position that Sparta had had. That is probably a goal of Theban policy going back to the time of the Persian Wars. But this too passed quickly. In 362 BC at the Battle of Mantinea, Epaminondas, the architect of these victories, was slain in a battle against the Spartans and Athenians. In many ways, the history that follows in the generation or two after the Peloponnesian War is even more dismal than the Peloponnesian War. There are a series of wars and battles which ended in 362 BC, according to Xenophon, in leaving more confusion in Greece than before. And in many ways, it is Xenophon's account, the success of the Spartans in the Peloponnesian War, this notion that Athens should have won the war, that leads many historians to see this period as really a historical mistake, a bitter victory for Sparta. And yet one should think for a moment, would an Athenian victory have been any better? Would the Athenians have been able to forge a wider unity? And that really gets down to modern perceptions of the 19th and 20th century, particularly British and German historians, who would like to see the history of Greece follow the path of the history of Rome. That either Athens or Sparta should have won the war, should have built a wider political unity. It should have led to a federalism, a united states of Greece, if you will, and it never did. And the single problem with all of that is a Greek city-state was not a building block to build such a federal system. At best, you would get an alliance, a regional alliance, headed by a great hegemon, but no evolution into the type of state that Rome became, or even Carthage became, the great opponent of Rome. And instead, the destinies of the Mediterranean world in the long run would not rest with the city-states, but that city on the Tiber that was just emerging. And that leads us to the final question. If this is so, then what are the lessons of the Peloponnesian War? And that I reserve for the final lecture.